This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Melissa Block. In the summer of 1964, with a presidential election looming, President Lyndon Johnson ordered military action in response to events in the Gulf of Tonkin off the shores of North Vietnam. Commentator Walter Cronkite now continues with his reflection on how U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War escalated as a result.
As American planes took off for North Vietnam, the president was determined to avoid the two great miscalculations President Truman had made in Korea. The limited scope of the Tonkin response was calculated to avoid provoking Chinese intervention, and Johnson was not going to make war without the political cover of a formal mandate. He saw the Tonkin incident as the opportunity he needed to sign Congress on as a full partner.
I shall immediately request the Congress to pass a resolution making it clear that our government is united in its determination to take all necessary measures in support of freedom and in defense of peace in Southeast Asia.
The Tonkin Gulf resolution was rushed to Congress the next day. In a nimbus of patriotic fervor, it asked Congress to pre-approve any military actions the president might take. It would expire when the president said it would. The Senate passed it with only two dissenting votes.
We're at war in violation of the Constitution of the United States. Article 1, Section 8.
The two dissenters were Ernst Gruening of Alaska and Wayne Morse of Oregon, both Democrats. Morse was the most outspoken and the most prophetic.
But one thing I do know, and that is we're going to be bogged down in Southeast Asia for years to come if we follow this course of action, and we're going to kill thousands of American boys. Until finally, let me say, the American people are going to say what the French people finally said, they've had enough.
Time magazine dismissed Morse as irascible. It treated the resolution as little more than an afterthought to the high drama of the Gulf. Communist aggression was a phrase most of us were conditioned to react to. If the president said there was an emergency, we took him at his word.
I confess I've supported it all the time.
Many of us supported the president, including the man who managed the resolution in the Senate. But J. William Fulbright still owed Lyndon Johnson a lot in 1964. Johnson had mentored him in the Senate and helped engineer his chairmanship of the Foreign Relations Committee. It was too early to see that Fulbright would soon become the president's fiercest critic. Johnson avoided Truman's two major Korean errors, but his own error in Vietnam would linger much longer. He misled the American people. The country never forgot it, and Fulbright never forgave him.
The events as they related them of August the 4th, 1964, were not true. In fact, there was no attack at all. So it was, they represented to us that we had been attacked, which was all a phony and a false. And the rationale for the resolution was that if we have passed this quickly and unanimously, if possible, it will be a warning to the North Vietnamese and they will no longer infiltrate. They'll quit. It'll scare them off. We'll bloody their nose and they'll stop. And I suppose in Texas politics, if you do that, these people stop. It just didn't work that way in Vietnam.
After Johnson's retirement in 1969, I went to the LBJ ranch several times to tape a series of personal reflections on his presidency. Johnson's resentment of Fulbright was still festering. I didn't have to bring it up. He did. Don't you think that perhaps we were set up psychologically
for that defeat by the optimistic statements from Vietnam and from Washington?
Congress gave us this authority in August 1964, and the Southeast Asia Resolution, which they misnamed, they called it the Tonkin Gulf Resolution. It would shame somebody didn't think of calling it the Fulbright Resolution, like Fulbright scholars and things, because Senator Fulbright introduced it with his knowledge, with his approval, with his consent. He passed it. He voted for it, 82-1. Don't tell me a Rhodes scholar didn't understand everything in that resolution, because we said to him at the White House, that the President of the United States is not about to commit forces unless and until the American people through their Congress sign on to go in. Committee hearings before Armed Services and Foreign Affairs, where Secretary Rusk asked every question. He didn't hurry that committee hearing.
Not quite true. The Senate and House committees sped it through after only 90 minutes. The next day it passed unanimously in the House. The Senate approved it that afternoon. I can still see Johnson's long arms gesturing broadly across the small coffee table as he spoke with me. If Fulbright had felt lied to, Johnson felt betrayed, like a man deserted and left holding the bag. The White House Tonkin tapes may make an old reporter feel he missed a great scoop, but they show only how bad intelligence can shred good intentions. Would Congress have acted differently without the artificial crisis atmosphere? For all the controversy that has surrounded the incident, the answer is probably no. Many good Americans were frustrated with the country's self-imposed limits as advisor. The concocted sense of crisis stirred a reactive patriotism. The fact that there were no casualties and no damage hardly mattered. It seemed reasonable to teach the communists a lesson. I can't say that I saw the situation differently at the time. If there were things Johnson wasn't telling, though, there was far more he simply didn't know. He believed that North Vietnam would not stand up to American strength. It would be years before experience would instruct him otherwise. And finally, there was the duty to the dead. Most wars are driven by two forces, national pride and human loss. The first starts wars, the second sustains them. This is because the first casualty creates an investment in blood that retreat would seem to dishonor. The Tonkin Gulf Resolution set off a dynamic of carefully limited responses, each calculated to redeem the one before. After 4 years of limited responses, America found itself with a force of 550,000 in Vietnam and no possibility of redeeming the 58,000 who had died. That was the hardest course to resist. It had happened before, in 1914. But in the rush of the Tonkin crisis, no one thought to notice that World War I had started exactly 50 years before that week. Perhaps history was whispering an omen. For National Public Radio, this is Walter Cronkite.
You can hear more of President Johnson's August 1964 conversations with Defense Secretary McNamara at our website, npr.org.